It has been said for quite some time now that America can't make things anymore. Cars, computers, phones, even furniture. Something else can be added to that list. Energy. Oh, we produce enough to get by, but domestic production hasn't been fully reached because of green energy ideas instead of being given priority. That decision has allowed countries like China to amass a huge energy arsenal, which is being weaponized against America in a variety of ways. When you think about that, my next guest joins us to discuss how the solution to this situation is actually within reach. He's an economist with the American Energy Institute and CEO of PetroNerds, host of the PetroNerds podcast, Tricia Curtis. How are you today, Tricia?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Great to have you here. PetroNerds.com, AmericanEnergyInstitute.com. We have those links for your reference at our homepage as well. And you recently wrote an article about how China is taking the lead. Winning against China means winning on energy. How did we wind up losing to China at this point in time?
Well, you know, you intro'd that well, but it's complicated. So, you know, this has been taking place over the course of 40 years with China, in this competition with China. But it's super important to realize that we are the largest oil and gas producer in the world. And we actually have the largest reserve of coal in the world as well. So we actually should not have a problem on energy. It is because of policies and not what's in the ground that's preventing us from doing that. So we produce 13.64 million barrels per day. That's almost 4 million barrels a day more than Saudi Arabia and Russia, the second largest producers. And we produce double the natural gas of Russia, the second largest producer of natural gas. So we have a lot of natural gas, 130 billion cubic feet per day. We have a lot of oil. But the problem is when it comes to electricity and the grid, that's where China has done a really, really good job in terms of just being very, very steady in building out their coal-fired power generation. And unlike the West and the rest of the world, where we've all gone crazy on green policies and decarbonization and carbon capitulation, China's just moved steadily forward because they're building things, and they have to do that with the energy that they have. And they are not abundant in oil and gas, but they are abundant in coal. And so since Mao, they've heavily leaned into coal, and they now have more power generation than any country in the world. They have a third of the world's power generation, but over half of that is coming from coal and coal alone, which means it's super energy secure and super reliable. And really importantly, with coal, it's really dispatchable and it's really cheap.
And another way that's benefited China is the fact that they can refine rare earth minerals to the point where they are by far the dominant holder of those vital minerals for all things that modern life needs to function, basically.
Absolutely. And that's like a key point, and I put it in the article, but it's just important to realize is that, you know, China put these rare earth restrictions on, and if implemented, it will severely restrict all their exports of rare earths. And, you know, it's not that these actual metals and minerals, you know, are in the periodic table are that rare. We can mine them elsewhere, and we have them in the U.S. But that would mean that we have to start mining. Just like we got to mine for coal, we got to mine for these rare earths. But it's the processing. And processing, like refining, it's processing and refining. It requires energy. It's a very energy-dense, very heat-intensive process. And that's what China is very good at, because China doesn't have the environmental regulations. They pull the Band-Aid off. They don't care. They just do this stuff. And refining rare earths, it's not just energy-intensive. It's environmentally intensive. You have to extract uranium. You have to extract thorium off of it. And you have to, I mean, it's you have to do a lot to it. It's a big industrial process. And so we don't do that in the U.S., and almost all of that is done exclusively in China. So it's important that they control the end product. It's that end product that, you know, ends up in batteries from your iPhone, but also into electric vehicles. And, you know, they control they basically produce all solar panels and all most onshore wind turbines and most batteries and a huge portion of EVs as well.
That's fine. We make deals with nations like Australia, but that's not going to come to any fruition for at least a year. We made a deal with Ukraine, and, well, that's way in the distance before anything can be realized from that. With the dominance of electrical generation and the need for electricity to operate data centers in our rapidly increasing world of artificial intelligence, doesn't that put China again ahead in a very vital element of world existence versus versus the United States?
So, you know, this is kind of where it gets back, like on paper, yes. But this is where it gets back to sort of, you know, how we won against the Soviet Union, formerly Russia, in the Cold War. And we won because we had a superior economic dominance, right? And we were better, right? And our economic position was in a better situation, and we outsmarted them, and we made this work. We need to be doing that now. We have the energy. We shouldn't be being beat. But China's built it. And so we do need a lot of energy for artificial intelligence. We need a lot of energy just for anything, right? We need low-cost, reliable electricity for you and I to turn our lights on and for us to have this conversation and record it. But we need it for business. We need it for manufacturing. We need it to make automobiles, to make aluminum. You need that in peacetime, but you absolutely need that in wartime. And China has, when they have 10,000 terawatt-hours of power generation or one-third of power generation, they can do not just AI, but they can do everything. And so they built out this massive coal-fired power generation base, and now energy is an afterthought for them, not a beginning thought. And for us, it's this beginning thought where, as we're building out data centers and AI, everybody's trying to figure out where they're getting the power from, and it's driving up electricity prices. And we already had the spike in electricity prices way before AI. So we have a big problem. And the bigger problem is that, you know, we're thinking about artificial intelligence in a very, very different way than China. You know, China is a controlled surveillance state, right? They're building DeepSeek and all their AI on open source stuff, but it's limited, right? You're not going to be able to Google Tiananmen Square or, you know, say that Xi Jinping is Winnie the Pooh. And what does that mean? Like, none of that's going to pop up, right? It's going to be very controlled. They want AI for military and military deployment. We want AI for productivity and businesses and enhancing things and having businesses hire less people. And that's a very different thing. And I would say that's fundamentally the number one thing that differentiates the U.S. and China, that people have to really understand why this cheap coal really, really matters. And that's that we don't compete the same way that China does. China does not care about costs, and they don't care about profits, and they don't care about margins, which should tell you that their end goal is a very, very, it's a lot different than ours. And their end goal is probably, it's probably sitting more in the realm of conflict than it is in profitability.
Dr. Tricia Curtis, who is an economist with the American Energy Institute, CEO of PetroNerds, host of the PetroNerds podcast, PetroNerds.com, AmericanEnergyInstitute.com. And you're listening to Issues and Ideas. I know people use California as a benchmark of what's wrong with energy policy in the nation, but New Jersey should be part of the consideration, too. We're seeing rate hikes, the candidates for governor promising day one days of declarations of emergency, and which will do nothing to solve the problem. But we're a state where we are getting an increasing amount of our electricity through auction from other states. And if you've never been to an auction, you don't do bargain shopping and auctions too much. That explains why trying to fill the void versus find new production is what results in the higher prices.
Yeah, it's a big problem, and especially in places like the Northeast and East Coast and West Coast have some of the highest electricity prices, not dissimilar to what we're actually seeing prices like in Germany for electricity prices that are 45 cents a kilowatt hour. You're seeing some prices as high as that on the East and West Coast. And that cripples your ability to turn the lights on and heat your homes, but also just to manufacture anything. So it really matters. But your point on your buying this power, the problem we have right now is a lot of these states have these power purchase agreements where they really favor this very, you know, they favor the cheap upfront cost of wind and solar that's heavily subsidized by China because supposedly that it's green. And the problem is it's not green, but also it raises your electricity costs immediately when it gets into the grid. And so places in like New Jersey, places like New York, everywhere in the Northeast, you have an abundant of, you have the largest natural gas resource in the entire world in the Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania and a little bit in New York. All you have to do is build pipelines to get it and build, you know, natural gas power generation. It's not super complicated, but this has been, you know, for a couple decades, no one's wanted to build a pipeline in the Northeast, and no one wants to build anything. So there's a big problem going on in the Northeast and the West Coast for NIMBYism, that not in my backyard and not building anything. But it's not because we don't have the resource. And I say this to folks a lot. I was in Houston this week speaking at a conference. I was in Dallas last week. I say this to audiences and business leaders a lot, is that it's not that we don't have the energy. We have more natural gas than the world needs over. And we could solve this problem with, and we should have very, very cheap electricity prices, but we don't. And that's a regulatory problem. We can easily solve this and provide this energy. We have it right there. We have it in the Northeast.
Just to wrap up, would this be an easier answer to reach for and grab if the refineries, the mining industries, everyone who does the digging and the exploration made their dedication of doing it safely and doing it not to damage any precious part of the environment? Are they making their intention clear enough that would silence any of the objections that run up against what is, as you write in the article in the Daily Caller, a very reachable solution?
Yeah, you know, I don't think it's that simple, because if you go to a coal mine, and I encourage people to do so, go. We have the largest surface coal mines in the world. Several of them are in Wyoming, outside of Gillette, Wyoming. Two of the largest surface coal mines, I think the third is in Indonesia, and the fourth and fifth are also outside of Gillette. Go to those coal mines, they are run extremely well because coal has been battered and beaten for decades, right? Everybody's wanted to get rid of coal. It's been heavily penalized. Everyone hates them, thinks it's akin to smoking cigarettes. It's evil. And it's really not, right? It's a very energy secure rock that you dig out of the ground and you sit next to a power plant. And when you need it, you use it, which means it's super, super energy secure. And it's an energy dense rock, right? So it's the energy density that matters so much. But they do a really, really good job with this mining, because we've largely had a moratorium on mining new coal mines in the U.S. And so they've really trimmed down their businesses. So I think we have a lot of lessons to learn from the coal mining industry that has barely survived, you know, within the United States and has been beaten down for years. And now under the Trump administration, there are new policies to breathe new life to allow us to mine. But you have to have the economic environment supported. But I just want to remind listeners that coal, the reason why it's so important, especially in this AI world with natural gas, is that it enables natural gas. Because natural gas is now half of our grid, but it can fluctuate in price. And coal is extremely cheap. So if you keep that coal-fired power generation and you stop decommissioning it, it can help backstop that when you have a price spike for natural gas. And no, it's not going to raise emissions considerably. And we do it very cleanly in the U.S. We have really, really high NOx and SOx and environmental requirements, very different than China has and the rest of the world has. And so we have the ability to do this. We just have to do it. But no, I think it's understanding that all of this stuff has to be mined. It's understanding that we have to build things in the U.S. We have to dig for things with a backhoe and a shovel that's powered by diesel. We have to, you know, reduce this muscle atrophy that we've had for mining things, for digging things. And it's super important. And it can be done. You know, I think we had problems like this in the early innings of World War II, where we were hesitant to do things, and then we realized we had to do them, and we did them. And so I think the U.S. has the resources and can do it, but we need to start doing this stuff now so we don't end up in a situation like we did in World War II.
Find out more about PetroNerds and the services that they offer and the podcast that Tricia hosts, PetroNerds.com, and to find out more about the American Energy Institute, AmericanEnergyInstitute.com. She is an economist with the aforementioned American Energy Institute, CEO of PetroNerds and host of the podcast PetroNerds, Tricia Curtis. Tricia, thank you for helping us better understand versus the hype and the political leverage others try to do to take people away from the facts and the reality. Thanks for being here today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.